Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a queer and Latinx podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx media, such as...
Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna and Y Tu Mama También.
They were in love, dude.
Like, nobody, like, off the bat knows that, but we know that.
We knew that the whole... I mean, no, you're right.
Yeah, like, it gets you at the end and you rewatch it sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, at the end, there's this scene... That, dear Lord, it makes sense. Like, everything that you've been watching the whole movie, you're like, cool, where is this going? And then at the end, you realize that's where it went.
Yeah, like, you think it's about this older woman? No, it's about them.
Them being in love with each other.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What's up, girl?
Not much. Just, you know, drinking some Jack and Coke.
Oh, same. I'm waiting for it to hit. Lit.
It already hit me, man. I need a nap.
Oh, stay awake. Stay awake.
I will.
So today, what are we covering, Maita?
We're covering something that we love.
Yes. Yes.
A lot less queer, but very Latino and awesome. And important to me specifically because Guillermo del Toro is an amazing writer.
Girl, the both of us.
And one day I want to be the Guillermo del Toro of TV.
So you're going to be the Maite.
Yeah.
The Maite of TV.
So we're going to talk about Guillermo del Toro today, but...
I'm obsessed with him too, girl. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, he's great. Guillermo del Toro. he's not the only director out there, of course.
No.
We have Alejandro... People. González Iñárritu, mm-hmm. who did Birdman, Revenant, you know, the fucking Oscar shit. Like
Amores Perros, which was Amores lit as Perros, fuck. One of my, like, favorite movies.
Underrated.
Super underrated.
Like, I know it's in Spanish and you have to put on your subtitles for it, but you can do it. Like, just fucking do it. Just read a little bit.
It's worth it.
Get some seasoning in your life. Like, it's great.
Get some salsa, okay? It's not hard. No, but, like, that movie is what got me into, like,
Gael García Bernal.
No, I mean also Gael García Bernal, because he's dreaming. His eyes are beautiful and he's a beautiful man.
We're still gay, I promise.
We're super gay, but that man, he's gorgeous. He's pretty.
It isn't. He's like,
he's a pretty man.
Otherworldly. It doesn't count.
He is otherworldly. He's a gorgeous man. No, but like that movie is what pushed me into getting into this genre, period, and getting into Alfonso Cuarón and watching Almodóvar.
Alfonso Cuarón is great too. If you're into like Harry Potter movies, he did the third one. That's why it had such a like a different vibe from the other ones. But he did the third one.
Was so different from the book.
No, it wasn't.
He got his firebolt at the end when he got his firebolt at the beginning. Okay,
it was.
Can we talk about factual correct Harry Potter happenings? The timeline was all over the place.
It was, yeah, okay, but it was
It was the most original movie, but not the no. I don't want that shit from Harry
Potter
movies.
Other movies fucked with the story too.
Yeah, I don't like them either. I still don't get it twisted.
I liked it.
That's my least favorite.
The cinematography, okay?
The cinematography. Cinematography was lit.
I loved
lit.
It.
The hippogriffs.
But he also did, Alfonso Cuarón did other stuff. He did Gravity. And I know you liked it.
Oh,
don't even lie to me.
I love Gravity. His, like...
The sound design.
His sound design, his ability
of Sandra Bullock.
His use of Sandra Bullock, period. Point blank in those shorts. And,
Damn.
No, but he was tricep. He was able to make a thrill. He made
it thrilling. Do you even need a tricep in space? Like, you don't have any. Anyways.
A what?
Because he has, like, this huge tricep. Anyways. Just, like, popping out.
George Clooney, I could have done without him, but it's cool. But Sandra Bullock all day, every day, 24/7. Love you, girl.
Yeah, call but me. Alfonso Cuarón's fucking epic. So is Alfonso. And so is... Yeah, all of them.
They're amazing directors. And between them, I can't even count how many awards they got. Can you?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I do want to move beyond it being, like, straight, male, light-skinned Mexican dudes winning.
Light-skinned, rich Mexican dudes, because that's what they all are.
I mean, they're rich because of their movie. But still, like, you know, I mean, like, let's get some women. Let's get some dark skins. Like,
Aurora Guerrero, director of Mosquita and Mari.
She's great.
You're amazing. We love you.
She's dope. But today we are going to just concentrate on Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, one of our favorites.
Yas. I mean, a little history on him in general. He's from Mexico, and dude just came on up. Like, he had a lot. He fought for his, like, little personal films that he's done. He fought hard, you know what I mean? Like, even though he was getting the funding because people recognized his talent, he was still like, you don't have to Hollywood up this bullshit. But later in the years, I mean, he has done some Hollywood stuff. So what we're going to talk about today is going to be split. It's going to be his personal films, or personal one of his personal films, which is Pan's Labyrinth, such a popular
That was based film. Off, like, something deep within him. Like, what's the backstory on that?
I think it just has to do... He kind of has a little bit of an obsession with, like, his childhood, I think.
Doesn't everybody?
Yeah. I mean, like, some people become pretty affected, but I don't know. And then he also has his big Hollywood films, Hellboy, you know, all the shit that he's been producing. He's been producing a lot. He has Shape of Water coming up.
Ooh,
that
yes.
looks really good.
Comes out in December?
December, and it's, like, super steampunky looking, and... you know, Forbidden Love type of shit. Like, you can just tell, like, this looks a lot more like his personal films, that, like, Pan's Labyrinth and The Devil's Backbone. It has more of that kind of a feel.
Yes, it does.
Than his other Hollywood movies have done.
Than, like, Pacific Rim or...
Right,
Hellboy.
Which you're going to talk about today.
Oh my god, yes!
So, I'm excited for The Shape of Water, because I think he's trying to go back to his roots just a little bit.
It feels very Pan's Labyrinth, very Devil's
it's
Backbone.
It's very Guillermo. Like, it's...
That's what I feel like he's most recognizable outside of, like, action, is
yeah.
stuff like that. Because, like,
you think about those other
sci-fi shit.
Yeah, when you see his big movies, you think of those movies, not of him. But when you think of Pan's Labyrinth, you think of him.
Yes.
So that's why we're kind of doing one of each.
Yes.
And, but yeah, he's great. I fucking love him. I want to be him.
He's so cute. He made, like, a Totoro joke about himself. Like, he's just the cutest human being. Like, adopt me. Or just let me work for you. It's cool. But, yeah, so I guess I can start it off.
Yeah, for sure.
I am talking about Pacific Rim today because... Whoa. Yeah, what's up? Because I'm super into Power Rangers and Godzilla. And who isn't? If you're a 90s baby, you most likely grew up watching Godzilla on UPN. because they used to show the original, like, Godzilla from, like, black and white, 1960s. And then I feel like Godzilla and Power Rangers are kind of one in the same. I know for sure that the guy who made Power Rangers had spent a lot of time watching Japanese, like, media. And he had watched, it is Japanese media, basically. He stole it. He stole the whole idea, the whole concept. The whole idea of, you know, fighting monsters coming out of the water and, you know, humans putting on these suits and fighting back. And that's exactly what Pacific Rim is these humans putting on suits, fighting Godzilla, you know? I'm really into it. you know, if you're into, like, Gundam Wing, if you're into, like, any kind of anime, you're gonna be super into Pacific Rim because it's like a live action anime. I'm super into it. The special effects in this movie are ridiculous. The worlds that Guillermo del Toro builds is ridiculous too. It feels definitely like a world that, I mean, it's only supposed to be like 2026, so hopefully this isn't our reality in the next couple years. Like, that's all I'm saying. Like, dystopian, war-torn countries that... I mean, the only good thing about his world is that, you know, there is no global war amongst ourselves. It's just, like, everyone uniting against these, you know, creatures coming out of the sea. Which, you know, I guess. I guess. No, but this is one of my favorite movies because it also doesn't play into, like, this stereotypical prepubescent boy narrative. There is no, like, naked women showing off their body. Like, you know, I'm throwing shade to Blade Runner 2049. You're trash because all you did was show titties and you thought that was a good distraction from your terrible writing. Pacific Rim is the complete opposite of every Transformers movie you've ever seen because this isn't trash. This isn't fast food media. This instead is, like, you know, like a good lunch. You know, this isn't like McDonald's that we just ate. This is like this is like your mom making you food for you and your friends. And it feels that way when you watch it. So the whole concept is that, you know, the world has come together to fight these monsters coming out of the sea, these creatures that look surprisingly like fish and like insects. Water.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this doesn't sound surprising.
Water. Water. Hey. Fucking your bitch like water. Hey. sorry, we like mumble rap here sometimes. And what I really enjoyed about that is because I felt like I was seven again, but like with really good special effects, not the shitty shit from like Power Rangers and Godzilla. Like, these buildings look fantastic. And also, why are there tons of tall buildings if you guys know that you guys have like insect creatures gonna topple them?
Like, I mean, are this, they building it after this, they yeah, come out?
This is after, because like, this, they continue is, building this is like a continual process of monsters coming out of the sea for like 6 years just attacking people. So I'm like, wait, how did you get that building that high after the last week when they tore it down? Like, massive cities getting destroyed and then rebuilt within like, I don't know, a year?
I mean, maybe they have the technology where it's kind of an easy
thing. It's only supposed to be 2020 at the beginning of this movie. So it's, I mean, 3 years from now.
Sea monsters, dude. Like, I don't think they have to be realistic.
Again, this is a Guillermo del Toro sci-fi movie. This is before Trump. So. And I'm over here, like, trying to give you the realist. But you know what I do like about this movie is they do pay attention to the very small overlook, like, features that, you know, a movie bothers me when, like, something happens and it just doesn't make sense. So in this movie, if a creature that comes out of the sea attacks your city, there's obviously someone who's selling off the parts of this alien creature and making money off of it. And I really appreciate that they focus on cleaning up the monster after it's fucking just laying there after you've just so you killed it. Like, I love that there's this like underbelly in this world that comes in and sells these like alien body parts on the black market. I'm really into that because I'm like, what, who's gonna clean the mess, you know? Like, how do they build these buildings? I'm the only one who cares about shit like that. So they played into my like deepest anxieties when I watched this. So thank you, Guillermo. Yeah, I appreciate that. Now, the whole thing is about how humans kind of interact with each other, how humans can have a hive mentality, how human relationships can affect everything and either make it better and or worse. So there are these giant Jaegers. It kind of reminds me of Attack on Titan anyways. It's very Attack on Titan too. There are walls built to protect them from these creatures coming in. And these creatures.
Let me guess, it doesn't work.
Huh?
Let me guess, it doesn't work.
Of course not.
Fuck a wall.
Fuck a wall.
We'll drink to that.
Yes.
All right, everybody. Get in.
Some ASMR.
Fuck. Oh, yeah.
Some ASMR, like, ASMR crinkling ASMR. Of the clinking of the cups. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Now I'm going to take a sip. One of my favorite things. Whisper into the. One of my favorite things about this movie.
Oh my god. Joe's going to die.
Joe's dying. It went up Joe's nose. No. Oh my god.
I'm so sorry.
With your AMSR whispering. It went up AMSR. His nose.
The yeah.
Wait, how is it?
ASMR.
AS. See, I always do it wrong, like SUV. Law and Order SUV. Wait, what is it?
SVU. It's Law and Order where they like do reviews on a bunch of SUVs.
They investigate.
Dun,
like,
dun, Escalade.
They investigate broken down SUVs on the side of the road.
Oh my god.
Ooh, that's a these good are sign. The stories of the broken down SUVs on the side of the road, and these are their stories. Dun, dun, dun. Oh lord.
Oh my god.
Okay, back to Pacific Rim. Now, what I like about this movie is that there's a focus on relationships that isn't romantic. A lot of it is about familial bonds, the bonds you have with your father, your brother, your sister. And I like that there is no romantic interest. There's no romantic leading man. No, this is all about friendship and love. And it makes you take a second look at like your relationship with your brother, your mom, your, you know, your friend. It's not really about romantic love. And I love that they don't sexualize the only woman in the movie. When her name is Rinko, and she's amazing because she's also one of my favorite characters in this movie. They don't sexualize her. They make her a badass. She's equally as strong as the leading male character, which is Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy and his amazing abs.
Charlie Day is in this, right?
Yes, he is.
I love Charlie Day.
He's super cute. Everything. He's cute. But Charlie Hunnam is like shirtless in this, and I love that instead of sexualizing the woman, they sexualize him. He's like shirtless all the time in his abs, like putting on his shirt. I was like, okay.
I wish I was him.
Yeah, he's a gorgeous man. And instead of making the one leading female character and the one leading male character have a romantic interest, and instead of creates a bond with them that isn't sexual. It's just about them like really understanding each other and trusting each other. And because the whole point of moving this giant robot that kills these creatures is that you have to kind of mind meld with the other person. They call it a handshake. like a mental handshake. So
they have to
a neural handshake.
Fuse, like the
they
gems?
Have to fuse. Yeah, they're basically fusing their minds together into one. So they reach into each other's like
shout
deepest.
Shout out to our last episode.
Yeah, right. They fuse into each other's like deepest insecurities and fears and worst like memories in life. And so it's really more about trust and love than romantic shit. And at the end, it's not about them being in love. It's just about them kind of sharing an intimacy that isn't like sexual. It's not romantic. It's just,
that's dope.
It's just trust. And I feel like a lot of that is kind of like consent, very basic ideas of relationships, like consent and love and family binds and responsibility and how you feel about people that you love that aren't romantic. I feel like most sci-fi movies kind of overlook that to go straight to like titties. This one goes like straight to like feelings.
That's so
like,
Guillermo.
It is Guillermo. It's like it's a focus on like, you know, we can't.
He loves familial relationships and he loves like bonds mm-hmm. that are like real and deep and like sacrificial and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, and that's this whole thing. Like Charlie Hunnam's character, spoiler alert, his brother passes away early on, and after that he feels like he can never trust another person because he was still mind melded with his brother in the machine. The Jaeger, the Titan, basically, to attack the creatures, whatever. His mind was still melded with his brother, so he got to feel his pain, his insecurity, everything he was feeling as he was dying, he felt it too. So that's pretty deep, like, to feel your brother's pain as he dies.
Yeah,
so,
fuck that.
So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, Guillermo, like, really, like... And I love that the whole movie is about the best in humanity going against the worst, you know, and the worst in humanity isn't necessarily even an invader or anything. They tried to make it seem like these creatures were coming from a different universe to attack our universe to colonize it, and all I thought about was white people.
So this came out
2013,
and this shit is so like relatable today, the way you're talking about like, you know, the good in humanity versus the bad in humanity, like that is so current. Yeah. You know what I mean?
White like, colonizers, the creatures coming out of the sea, versus humanity just trying, actually working together to kill them.
Yeah, or like all these fucking horrible people that keep doing all this terroristy shit here in our fucking country, and then all these good people lining up at the blood banks. You know what I mean? Like, it's maybe like yet not exactly sea monsters, but still like shit. Like,
yeah, and the
that's
thing
so real.
The thing is, it was like universal across the board. Like, it was Russian people, Japanese people. It was like a global world fighting together. It's everybody together, all humanity. Yeah, and I love that he's like hitting a nerve in the best in people. And also, shout out to him for having a black man be in charge of literally everyone. Idris Elba with a mustache for some reason has a more of a fatherly thing and less of like a handsome sexy man thing. Mm-hmm. Give him a mustache and suddenly he's like a caretaking father. I don't understand, but it worked. It really worked with that mustache, I'm telling you.
Isn't like a Pacific Rim Uprising?
Yep.
It has a John Boyega.
Yep, it's coming
and
out.
I love
it's
him.
Coming out soon. And
well, next year, but soonish.
Soonish, and that's pretty soon. It's gonna come by fast. And another black man in the lead.
I'm really excited.
And I love.
And I haven't even seen Pacific Rim.
You gotta watch.
But
it,
I love
dude.
John because I love this that fucking Star Wars movie that he's in. Like it's gonna be good.
Yeah. Okay, and another thing that I love about what Guillermo did with Pacific Rim is that he let Rinko Kikuchi speak her natural tongue. He let her speak Japanese and said, deal with it, Americans. I don't care. She doesn't have to speak English. You're going to read these subtitles, and you're going to get yours, okay? Get your you're going to deal with
just
it.
Read.
And I love that he did that with most of the characters. He let them speak in whatever accent they had. Like, Idris Elba didn't have to pretend to have an American accent, but Charlie Hunnam did. Anyways, I don't know if that's just how he talks now, honestly, after all the acting he does. But Rinko got to speak Japanese. I love that there was actual Asian representation and she wasn't fetishized. Like, it wasn't about her being Asian. Like, it was just her being a badass human being. Like, her being equal to the men, if not better, because she has to work twice as hard. So I really appreciated that he didn't fetishize Asian women, that he actually included an Asian woman. That was poppin'. I love it. She's my favorite character and the main reason why I even went to see Pacific Rim.
You said that there's only one woman that's that one woman?
I think she's like the only female character that like gets a speaking role.
So that sucks that there's only one. I'm not gonna lie to you, but
she gets a lot of screen time, dude. But for like, one, she's the main thing. They're not fetishizing her. They don't sexualize her at all.
They're not fetishizing the woman, and they're not fetishizing the Asian person.
Nope.
Like that's cool.
They do that to the white guy, and I'm totally into it.
They need to step it up with the woman game in this second movie, though.
Yeah, no, they definitely did. In the previews, I saw more women involved. And it's not that there wasn't...
I can't even think of one because I've only seen John.
It's not that there wasn't women in the movie. There were women Jaeger fighters. Like, they were part of, like, the people fighting.
But they weren't the main cast.
They really didn't get... Like, not... There wasn't a lot of time for people to talk because they were fighting.
Yeah.
So I'm really into, like... You know, if you're into Dragon Ball Z and anime, you're really into those fights, though. I liked
them.
Yo, there was a lot of next episode. There were a lot of like spirit bombs happening. There's a lot of trunk swords popping out of nowhere, and I was into it because I'm really into like anime. So I'm really into like these massive, like, you know, Iron Giant sized fights. Like, I love it. Another good movie. But yeah, so watch Pacific Rim. I give Pacific Rim like 4.5 pan dulces. Like, it's popping. I love it. Y'all should watch it. And it's aged well, just because this isn't a movie about, you know, what's it's you can always relate this back to like the failures in society and also the best parts of humanity, which is what he focuses on, is like the best part of humanity, people caring about each other and bonds. And it's really cute and good. And I like that the creatures are coming from within the earth. I don't care if they say they're foreign invaders. They're not to me. And a lot of, like, the Godzilla theme. I took, like, a whole class on, like, the Cold War and how a lot of media after the Cold War in Japan, like, Godzilla representing the fears and anxieties that happened post-atomic bomb. And I feel like a lot of this is just embedded into our culture now. Since the atomic bomb went off, since the Cold War happened, like, monsters are just... iterations of our fears, or, you know, the things we feel are going to happen, are deep-seated anxiety. And that's what these creatures represent. And that's why I really have always loved Godzilla and Power Rangers. So if you're into monsters, which I am, I'm into Godzilla, I'm into it, I love it, then you're going to be into Pacific Rim, and it's gonna give you a hug, because it's honestly, the world is trash right now, and Pacific Rim is like, oh, this is kind of cheesy, but this is adorable. This is adorable,
so
cheesy.
Relevant, like,
and relevant.
That's
so Guillermo cool. has a way of making a movie relevant regardless of when it was made.
Like, think about it. Guillermo is evergreen himself.
Yeah, he's evergreen. Like, you think about it. Like, none of the, like, Pacific Rim, I watched again for the first time yesterday. not again. I watched it a bunch of times, but you know, for fun. And honestly, it didn't age to me. Even if he said it was 2026 or some shit, it didn't matter. It stayed. It's a good. It aged well.
Oh, watch it.
4.5 at some point. Bandulces. I love it. Go watch it.
That's good. 4.5. That's like a...
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
For me.
And it... I haven't heard any bad things about it.
No. It's good. It's cheesy. I mean, expect the cheese. Like, these, like, speeches are, like, overdone. But, like, it's Idris Elba with a mustache. It's okay. Like, it's gonna... Charlie Hunnam with abs, you know? And so... We're going to go from, like, a super Hollywood Guillermo film to, like, a deeply personal... Well, actually, this one's still deeply personal, too.
Yeah, I think he, from what you're saying, he still managed to put himself in that, even though that's a big Hollywood film. But, I mean, I feel like...
There's a lot of heart in this, like, action movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, you know, something that comes from his own heart and, like, from his, you know, from his hands, you know what I mean? Like, written by him. Mm-hmm. That's that. You're definitely going to find that more in The Devil's Backbone. And you're going to find that in Pan's Labyrinth, which they're meant to be like sibling films. But I'm mostly going to focus on Pan's Labyrinth.
Because that's your favorite movie.
Because clickbait. No,
clickbait.
But basically, okay, so like, just like a few like random facts like off the top of my head that I can remember. He like fought, like basically this came out after The Devil's Backbone. The Devil's Backbone did amazing. So he was getting recognition. And he was, really? More importantly, he was getting... I know you don't like it, but it got a lot of good reviews and stuff like that. So he got funding. He, like, people were like lining up to give him money, but of course with that money comes influencer saying, here's the catch. So people were like, here's a shitload of money, but you have to make it in English. And he was like, no.
No like, deal. He's like, no deal.
Like, not only am I not going to make it in English, I'm going to make it in Spain. Like,
oh, that was amazing.
in Spain and in Spanish. And both of those films actually were made in Spain, and they centered around the Spanish Civil War. And this particular movie, The Pan's Labyrinth, was 5 years or so after the Spanish Civil War. And it was about this little girl and her mom going to go live with a general with the winning team, the fascists.
Ugh, baby daddy fascists, gross.
Yeah. Which, you know, like, it's not about, like, the mom didn't necessarily love him or anything like that. It's just that she needed somebody to take care of them, because back then, the options for women...
unmarried woman with a child is not like, the way to go.
It's not an easy
life. Even now, that's still frowned upon society, so...
It's still difficult for to be a single mom. It's just, back then, it wasn't even plausible.
Wasn't an option.
It was just not cool. So they went to go live with him, and this little girl, I mean, she's a child. She has a wild imagination. So what's cool about this film is that it's about it's about a kid, you know, and her, like, what we think may or may not be her imagination, and this you have to blend this fantastical world with the harshness of reality, and he walks that line. You will see how he walks that line.
He's amazing, dude. Like, who else can do that? Like, I honestly didn't know the whole movie what was reality and what wasn't.
It's all interpretation.
He's so good.
It's like, whether it's this fantastical world was real or not, it's up to your interpretation. At the end of the day, I don't think he meant it to be real or not real. It was just like, this is...
choose your own adventure type shit. Like, if you wanted to believe it,
right.
Cool. If not, then...
flip back to the page.
Then, you know.
Yeah, so obviously there's this labyrinth... that she finds on the first day that she's there, and she, whether you think believe it's her imagination or not, like, she finds magical elements within it, you know what I mean? She finds El Fauno, the fawn.
Yeah, what's the name of it in Spanish?
El Fauno?
El Fauno, El Fauno. Laberinto del Fauno. Right?
The actual movie, yeah. Laberinto del Fauno, I think.
Yeah.
So he, you know, immediately, like, instructs her to do a whole bunch of shit.
He gives her 3 tasks, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gives her, like, a bunch of tasks, and keep in mind, the number 3 is very important in this film.
Really?
Yeah, because it's, like, 3 tasks, she gets 3 fairies to help her, and there's kind of, like, 3 major points of the story. The main character is Ophelia. So, she, you know, like, her mom is pregnant, and she's kind of, like, left to her own devices because her mom's pretty fucking busy. And her, like,
dealing with her baby daddy fascist.
Sadistic general, dude. Like, he's literally a sadist. Like,
imagine
crazy.
Imagine, like, a white supremacist, but who speaks Spanish.
But he's Spanish, and he has, like, that fucking Hitler hairstyle. And
he's just a white supremacist.
Obsessed with his dad. You know what I mean?
Also, again, good job,
daddy issues.
Like, this shit's, like, so present to this day. Fascism? Yes. Never ending.
So, like, the movie has, you know, like, just like the whole movie, it begins with the 2 parts of it. There's, like, the fantastical story that is kind of narrated about this princess who needs to return to rule the underworld alongside the king and the queen.
It's like a fairy tale, right?
Right, which is a fairy tale. And then you have this little girl going to live with her stepfather or whatever, and that's the reality. So it's always back and forth. Yeah, I don't know, but basically...
facts all wrong. Okay.
Yeah, the Civil War of Spain is, like, super relevant in this film, basically, because one of the underlying stories is the rebels versus the fascist general. And these rebels are, like, obviously, like, revolutionaries are trying to fight them. And even though in real life the fascists are winning, and they're winning fucking hard in Spain... like, the rebels in this movie kind of win. They, like, her housekeeper and...
they win the battle, not the war.
Yeah, the battle, not the war. But in this movie, you know what I mean, you end up with that kind of positive outlook, even though it's has a tragic ending.
Is it positive, though? I felt like fascism was kind of, like, a parallel thing to it killing her imagination, you know, like...
I think it was, like, positive.
Fascism also killing the free thought in Spain, killing...
yeah,
her free imagination.
But this thing, like, at the end of the...
trying to stifle her imagination, at least.
But her imagination is what we end with.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. It could be seen both ways. Yeah. You could either see it as, like, imagination won, or you can see the reality that fascism didn't end until like 1970 yeah. something.
Because this is at the end of the day, like, it's a tragic thing. It begins with Ophelia, kind of spoiler, but not really spoiler, but it begins with her like literally just dying.
Yeah, that's how it begins.
And so they're not, you know, they're not like hiding this, like, oh, will she die or will she not? She's dead. She's gonna die.
She dies. She's but, that's how it opens.
But whether or not she goes on to become this like princess of the underworld or not is a real question. So that's why the way I guess I chose to look at it is imagination side, is that in this fantasy world, the rebels win. The rebels win in the story, just that battle, of course, but I think it's positive.
That is positive, because,
yeah,
you know, the way,
like, if
the way it could have ended in so many different ways, and he's a master because it ended in a way that, if you're positive, you're going to see that she won. But if you're a cynic and evil, you're going to be like, well, not evil, but if you're just cynical, you're
going to be like, yeah, because the whole time this dude is like power tripping, right? Like, he has no idea that these rebels
are Mr. Hitler haircut.
Yeah, he's power tripping. He's like seeking out the rebels, and he's like stealing people or taking people from the forest and accusing them of being rebels, and then like torturing them. And the whole time Ophelia is completely oblivious to this, but she's going through her own shit, where she's going through her first task, and she goes to,
oh, what is interesting, not unforgettable scene.
Yeah, well, I mean, her first task is it's when she goes into like this big ass like tree trunk, and like and like basically there's a giant toad in there. And she makes it spit out, like, it spits out a key, and that key is relevant for her second task. So she goes, her second task is the one that most people remember.
Oh, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's the one you're talking about. That's where,
God, that's terrifying.
There's a lot of religious elements in this, and this is kind of one of the major ones, where she goes there with the key to this, like, big-ass room.
There's a giant feast. That fruit looks so good, those grapes.
Super fruitful, like just a whole feast, and in this time period, you know, they're suffering from lack of food and all this other shit.
Yeah, there's not even like butter and sugar and stuff.
Yeah, like it's a struggle. So when she sees this, she's like, hell yeah, even though she was specifically instructed, like, don't eat anything,
whatever you do, don't touch the food.
At the head of this table holding this giant feast is a gross, disgusting pale man who Guillermo described when he wanted this monster created. He wanted an old, like, super old man who had recently lost a ton of weight. That's what he wanted it to look like. And this monster, the pale man, does not have eyes. So in his hands, he has what people refer to as stigmata hands, where he has holes in each one of his hands, just as people who suffer from the stigmata syndrome have. You know,
that's super creepy.
Yeah, so what he does is, like, whenever she eats the fruit, which she was instructed not to do, he comes to life and like puts eyeballs in his hands and like brings it up to his face so he can see, and then he attacks her. What ends up happening is that two of her three fairies get killed or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yo, and if you've ever played like Super Mario or Zelda, those are like her two extra lives, and they just died, y'all. So yeah, you got one life in this game left.
Yeah,
you got
so one fairy. The Fawn was pissed. He was like, I'm done with you. I'm fucking done with you. So he was pissed. He was like, I told you not to eat the damn fruit. Adam and Eve all over again.
Oh, wow. See, I never pulled that from that.
There's so many religious elements, like, just hidden. Like, the reason that this one is relevant to me, though, is because of the feast. At the same time that she's there trying to get this stuff with this key and these three little doors, the reason that this is relevant is because, at the same time, the general, the evil sadistic general, who has teamed up with the church, they're having a huge feast. While their people, like, citizens of Spain, like, starving, and it's a reference to how during that war and after that war, the church, they were total hypocrites.
The church and the state.
And the state, yeah. They had teamed up, and then they were, like, taking the bounty, you know, eating, and they were well-fed while everybody was suffering. So it was a contrast of those two feasts and the church's involvement. The pale man was said to be the church.
Oh, wow. Ooh, mind blown.
and then very small element, which I guess isn't super religious, but the three doors that she has to decide which one is the important one. One, the one that ends up being the right one that she chooses is the one made of wood, and the wood, you know.
Oh, like God choosing the cup made of wood instead of
the gold or whatever. Or yeah, whatever. It's like
the pimp cups. Like, he chose like a you know,
like you're humble, like you're yeah. of nature, you know, like that kind of thing. That
you're
kind
of the reference. People, not of yeah. the aristocrat. Whatever.
So that was a small thing that was also significant. I mean, I'm like halfway drunk already.
The three is religious because it stands for the Father, the Son, and the Holy
Spirit. The Trinity, the three.
Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I guess that is three.
Father, yeah. Son, Holy Spirit, say, yeah. We just...
Eventually, Vidal, who's that evil general, sadistic fascist that we're talking about, he...
Hitler haircut.
Yeah, Hitler haircut. He starts to catch on. He's like, okay, I think my housekeeper's up to him, up to something. My doctor is definitely up to something because he like basically did euthanasia on this captured rebel, and so he kills the doctor.
Yeah, and he totally just wanted to torture him, and he was like, bro, you're messing he's up like, my vibe. Yeah, my he's torture like, vibe, you know, don't mess yeah. up my torture vibe.
He was pissed, so he euthanized a prisoner. Of course, he's like, okay, no, nobody euthanizes my toys, essentially. And
sadistic bastard. Yeah. How did you know? I have a really weird question. How did someone so nice like her mom end up with like that creature man, that Hitler haircut, bro?
It was probably like
because she's hot, right?
I think it was because
it's because she's hot, and he's like super rich and in power, and she probably was like well to do.
I think
before.
It was a setup. I think it was a setup. It was just like, okay, she's single. He's looking for a wife.
He doesn't care who. He just wants to have. Offspring, because that's what he seemed really concerned yeah, about.
Because he has daddy issues.
He has an obsession with his clock.
He wants to be a daddy.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's just he's fucked.
And
he's
he knows fucked. That he can't get no regular girl because he's sadistic and evil. And you know, she's just trying to get with anybody at this point. She's like, yo, I'm just not trying to be left on the street and homeless because I'm too cute for that. And she is. She's really pretty.
Yeah, she's a beautiful woman. Unfortunately, he gets what he wants. He gets a son.
Yep.
But the mom dies. Which sucks because, you know, and that's where another place where...
Okay, but who messed up here, okay? All right, could we blame this on Ophelia?
No, we can't. Because you know what?
Oh, no, the mandrake root.
Yeah, so...
It was his
so
fault.
This is where...
It was his fault.
This
okay,
is
third
where,
test, third test.
No, before that, we're going to talk about this death because that's another place where they blur the lines between reality and fantasy. Because she's super worried and the fawn gives her this mandrake root to put inside of, like, milk... And put it under their bed,
the bed.
And under the bed, like, that's going to keep your mom well. And the mom was doing really well mm-hmm. when she did that. And she goes down there to, like, you know, like, tend to the mandrake root, which it looks like a lot like a baby. But
yeah,
Vidal finds her. Vidal finds her, like, tending to it and, like, throws the mandrake root in the fire. Like, you're fucking crazy. And he's pissed off. And
yeah,
because
he's like, what's this black magic? Woo.
Right. So, or not even black magic. She's just like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm throwing it away and throws it in the fire and it starts burning. And at the exact same time, the mom starts getting, like, crazy labor pains. So it blurs the lines of reality and truth because it's, like, reality and fantasy, I mean. Because it's, like, did she start messing up because this magic failed? Or was that just, like, in her imagination, like, of like,
yeah,
it's my fault, like, she's blaming herself.
Yeah, like, we, as an audience, he's made it to the point where we don't know which it is.
It's so blurred, yeah,
and
so...
Oh, that's genius.
It's cool, though. It's because that's the lens that children sometimes view us through.
Yeah, is it because I didn't tend my mandrake root that my dog ran away? Like, I mean, obviously, those two things are connected, you know?
Who knows?
These
yeah,
two
like,
things
kids
are completely
interpret
connected.
Things differently, and he does a really good job of it. So unlike this doctor, unfortunately, that gets killed, Mercedes, who is his basically like his housekeeper, like basically his maid, runs all kinds of errands for him. But she's a rebel and she's smart as hell. Like, this girl is smart and she's talented. So she like he catches on to her, but she catches up to him, too. Like, she knows that he knows that she knows. That. So she's ready for it, right? So he captures her, but she gets away, like, immediately. Like, she doesn't even get a scratch on her, I don't think. Or maybe she does. I don't know. I think that. Basically, she's good. She frees herself. She goes and, like, meets with the rebels who have been hiding out in the forest nearby. And that's where, like, her brother is, I believe, and, like, a bunch of other people. And they're getting ready to overtake his few soldiers that are around there, which is why we say that they only won the little battle. There's still a huge, big-ass fascist army to beat. This is just a small little piece that they get to win. So she does that, and you know, she gets away. In the meantime, the mom has died. They have a young son. Vidal is like over the moon, but also shit's popping off. Like, he has to go he has to take care of all kinds of business right now because his housekeeper's a rebel and she's run away. So he is also injured. Like, I believe she cuts the shit out of his cheek, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's struggling too, and
he's going through it right now.
Yeah. So
but we don't care about him, about Hitler haircut.
Right. So Ophelia is like, obviously she's like grieving, and she goes to the Fawn, and the Fawn's like, you need to bring me your little brother. Like, your third task is bringing me innocent blood. So she's obviously hesitant because she's gonna at first she thinks, okay, I gotta bring my little brother here, but she doesn't know about the blood part. She's just like, okay, I'm bringing him here. Like, it's fine. We need the innocent or whatever it is. And she brings him to the place, like to the labyrinth.
Labyrinth, yeah.
But as soon as the Fawn's like, I need his blood, she's like, there's no way in hell. So Vidal, you know, is chasing her because obviously that's his son, and he's like, he's struggling. I can't remember exactly what happens to him. Like, I think she put something in his drink or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. So he's struggling, but like, she tries to knock him out.
Like, drunk.
She's trying to knock him out and gets away, but he like jumps out of his little whatever it is and goes after
Hitler haircut makes it through.
Yeah. So he goes into the labyrinth, and that's when you can clearly see the contrast, because she, in her fantastical world, sees this Fawn, this amazing labyrinth, and through his eyes, it's very dull and plain, and he doesn't see what she sees. And he's there, and he's got his gun, and he's like...
Because adults are whack.
Yeah, because he, as a grown-ass man, can't
fascists
handle one little child.
Yeah, fascists are whack, shooter. Okay? Okay, you said it.
So he takes the baby, and he shoots Ophelia, so... Bam, that's the beginning of the story. Anyways, luckily, or actually not luckily, because she's already been shot, but
yeah,
the rebels...
kind of dark there.
Yeah. The rebels come down, lucky for the child, I guess. Like, the rebels True. Come down, and they're like, fuck you, you're not going to have this child.
He is never going to know your name. Pum, pum.
Yeah, because Vidal has spent this whole time obsessing over the time of his father's death, which is like... on his watch because his dad was wearing it when he got killed or whatever.
Broken clocks and ain't got no time, just working out. Anyways,
I'm gonna save you guys from that. So he's like,
listen to SZA though.
He's like, I need my son to know what time I died. And Mercedes, being the badass she is, he's like, he won't even know your name.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
And all of a sudden, somebody somebody comes and, like, kills him. So Mercedes goes after Ophelia, finds her. Her blood is spilling into the labyrinth. And that was it. That was her third task. After all, she spilled the blood of the innocent.
Which happened to be her blood.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. We didn't, you know, plot twist, it's her blood.
Right, so this is where the number three comes back again. You see her in this underworld.
Oh my god, everything's so bright and yellow and beautiful.
You see the king, which is kind of like a godly figure, and you see her mom. And there's three thrones, the third one is hers. So that's where the three comes in there. And that's where you're like... Is she dead?
Or is she the princess of this cool other world?
The underworld, yeah.
Like, how she deserves, because she's so cool. Because all children deserve to be... All slain children deserve to be princesses in the next world.
So that was one of, like, his most personal films. And that was a film, like, that is... I'm just describing it, but visually, it's stunning.
It is. All of these visuals stay with you. The slender man, loose skin, pale dude. Oh, my God, that's... Nightmares.
Even the Fawn, who's supposed to be like a good guy, he's scary. Scary
looking. Everything's scary looking. Fascist. He's encompassing so many things into one thing that's timeless, and it's reflective of human nature, of the violence that humans just carry with them.
Especially,
and how children don't carry
the trauma
that shit
for a child and the way that they view things.
Yeah, but kids, you know, they're innocent. They don't carry
that
shit.
I honestly feel like he was Ophelia as a kid because his imagination and his writing and everything is so amazing.
So personal.
That I'm like, this dude probably, like, did see fawns and shit when he was a kid. Like, he was probably, like, the most imaginative child.
I relate to that because when I was little, I spent a lot of time alone. So I think he did spend a lot of time alone.
I daydreamed all day. Like, it's all I did.
It's all I do now, too.
I wish I could do that more, but I'm a little too in tune to reality for my own liking.
No, I space out when I'm, like, driving, which is really bad. Like, I'll drive and then I realize I'm home and I'm like, whoa.
I space out when I'm driving. And I space out when other people drive. When other people drive,
oh,
like,
you're in a music video, out. Right? You're in a music video. You're
basically, like, dun, 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 I'm usually getting married with my current crush.
Ain't got no time. Anyways, I had to do that. I love SZA. But no, yeah, it feels like you're in a music video. That's how you space out. I always space out. That's really bad.
It's awesome for me, like,
cause... but I do it to someone mid conversation, like they're talking, and I'm like, dun, 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 dun,
dun. Damn.
I have the focus of a chipmunk. Like, it is. Ridiculous. It's up to, like,
you don't have to drag chipmunks for this, like,
hey, I love it. Chipmunks, do I identify with chipmunks and not Chippendale, Joe.
So anyways. Anyways, but yeah, back to, like, quickly to Pan's Labyrinth. This is like 2006 when this movie came out, but the cinematography it's still better than, like, some movies today.
Ugh, yes.
And it's very evergreen, just like Pacific Rim was. That's a very Guillermo thing. Like, these movies, like, it's not relevant for 2 years, it's relevant
forever. Weeks.
And this is a Latino writer, like, imagine, doing the right, damn
a Mexican
thing.
Teddy bird man. He's adorable. He's a walking, living Totoro, and he's admitted to that, and he's tweeted about it, and I love him.
All right, so yeah, I mean, I'm really excited for his upcoming movie, The Shape of Water, because I think he's going back to his roots. And
yeah, it looks very Hellboy as far as like the visuals, but very Pan's Labyrinth is the imagination.
Steampunk is
his
style.
He's super steampunk. He's somewhere in, like, Burning Man, like he's been to Burning Man at least twice. Like he probably is, like, co-funded that shit secretly is the co-funder of, like, Burning Man. But
so
yeah.
I mean I know this is a favorite of a lot of people, so hopefully you guys enjoy this conversation, because
yeah, we're kind of drunk
a little bit. And if you haven't, I mean, like, honestly, like yeah, I said, this movie spoils itself when it's in the very first scene. You don't need to be surprised, you know what I mean? It's not shock value. Like, this is a beautiful film. I can tell you, like, you can listen to the entire podcast and you, like, already know everything about it, and then go watch it and you're still gonna be impressed.
You're gonna take away different things than we did, and that's what's beautiful about it.
Like, I didn't talk about every single element, like, no, like, there's a lot,
there's so much there, and there's every time you watch it, you see something else that you didn't see before, and it something else touches you.
It's
so
about the journey.
It's about the journey, guys, not about the.
It's about the friends you made along the way.
Way. So how many cafecitos do you give this?
I would say a half of a cafecito,
just to see the detail, and
it's a half of a cafecito just because, like, you know, there's certain moments, I guess, like, in this particular instance it's not a cafecito, it's like a cup of tea, because sometimes, like, whenever some bad shit happens to these fucking fascists, you gotta just, like, sip that tea, like, yeah, bitch,
that's what you get. Yeah, broken clocks.
Anyways, yeah, so sip that tea. You don't even need any, so no cafecitos.
I give this
Get yourself a cup of tea so you can, like, sip some tea at some bitches.
Yeah, I give it 5 pan dulces. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
Fantastic.
It's like Circumstance. It's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. 5 pan dulces and half a tea.
Yeah, just like a cup of tea.
Just sip
to,
that tea to just,
and that,
like,
tea
smirk.
Is just for, like, just to be petty. Yeah, that's it.
For petty purposes only.
Yeah. You don't even need to be awake. You just have to have, like, something in your hand, stick your pinky out, let's do this shit.
Yeah, but anyways, so
thank you guys for listening.
Hope you fucked with this episode.
If you made it to the end, like, wow. I barely made it to the end.
Yeah
Over your, are you okay there? Barely.
I'm here still.
Also, so I'm, I mean, we like, if you have any opinions or, like, extra stuff that maybe we, like, didn't talk about,
yeah,
like,
if we missed anything, let us know.
Let us talk. We can talk about it, like, on CYC Podcast, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. We're completely open to you guys. We're so open. And as always, send in your should have been queer or were queer characters to CYCpodcastmail@gmail.com so we can talk about it here on the podcast ASAP. and of course
Rocky. High five, Joe. Yes. High five. ASAP Rocky. Anyways.
Okay. And rate and review us on
5 stars
on Apple Podcasts, because that helps us.
It helps us get visibility, and there aren't that many queer voices giving queer media a blast, other than like Nancy Podcast, who we love. Yeah. And
they don't talk about media as much. They're more like real world stories, so
sometimes yeah.
It's really sad, but go listen to them if you want some of that too.
They're pretty
we love
cool,
them.
Yeah. They're more real world. We're more like
let's
fantasy.
Talk about media and yeah. fangirl about things.
Let's not think about the real world.
We don't want to think about the real world. Let's get out of it's there. It's trash. We're your break from the real world.
I hope.
Dear Lord.
Anyways, rate us and review us if you agree.
Yeah, and follow us on the tweeters. Find us on the interwebs. And slide into Maitha's DMs, because she has dreamy eyes, everybody. Yeah. Dreamy eyes.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say to that.
You don't got to say anything. I'm here for you.
if you're in LA, like really hit me up, because I'm gonna be so alone. Like actually hit me up.
Just the way you said alone.
I know, because here in Dallas, like this is where my
everybody and their mama here. Oh, okay.
No, because these popping? Are where my people are. Mm-hmm. Like I go to LA, and
you know, my mom told me the other day. I thought it was very like us. Like what she said to me, and she was like, what was the coach's name from Glee? The
Sue Sylvester.
Sue Sylvester. Well, her actual, what's her real name?
Oh, I don't forget.
Okay, so her parents told her when she came out, they're like, you need to go to LA, you need to find your people. And I think that very much relates
in
to
LA?
Like you or not later San Francisco, California. Okay. California, you know, like yeah. California, go find your people. My mom told me the same thing, and I kept thinking, I was like, go find the gay people, mom. I think she's right though, and that's what you're doing. You're gonna go find your people too.
I'm gonna find my people, but like my media people.
You're gonna exactly yeah. your people. These are your family, basically. The people here are like your family. There are your people, like your media people. Your
yeah,
your
it's like the family
people.
You're born to, and then the family that you choose.
Yes, exactly, and that's who you're gonna go find. So.
Find me back.
Find her back, guys.
Hit me up. Maite Panda on Twitter. MYTE Panda.
Yeah, and at Fried Papita.
For
my tweeters. If you guys want to know like how I feel about Taylor Swift at, I don't know, 1 in the morning. I'm always wishing her to be a better human being, and how she's trash. And how she can,
oh my
how
God,
she can
no.
fix that. I love her, but I read her in a very loving way. So if you want tweets about how she could improve her intersectional feminism.
She tweets good things, too.
But what I like the most. But anyways, just follow at CYCO Podcast.
Yeah.
That's the best
That's
one.
The best one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, we love you guys.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. And
we'll see you.
Rate and review us. Yeah, and follow us on iTunes and subscribe. And put the word out there. There needs to be more of us, and there needs to be more of y'all. And we all exist together.
And we want to reach each other.
We want to reach each other. And obviously, I'm kind of drunk. So
we're getting really emotional. Really, we need to cut this.
Really emotional drunk. I love you guys. Bye.
Time out. Bye.